welcome to episode 54 of Magic FM. I'm Gabby Spartz, one of your hosts, as always, and I'm joined by Mashi Scanlon, as always also. Hey, Mashi, welcome.
Hey, Gabby, how's it going?
Good. I'm having a really nice Friday. I started off with some nice coffee. Love it.
Ooh. You know what's so funny is I this has happened so many times, but I was convinced yesterday was Friday.
Convinced. Oh, yeah.
It was Friday.
And then you were like, oh my God, what a letdown. I got to record a podcast with Gabby tomorrow.
Well, no, it was more like, oh, what a letdown. I've got to wake up early tomorrow. Because Saturday is our sleep-in day.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense.
So I was like, oh, I got to wake up at the regular time tomorrow. No!
Yeah.
But it worked out. You know, thank God it's Friday. You know, I love Fridays. So on the one hand, I thought yesterday was Friday. But on the other hand, last night I realized, oh, I get to have a Friday tomorrow. So, you know, it's not all downside.
Fridays are awesome, to be fair.
They really are. They really, really are. How was Halloween?
Halloween was good. So we ended up doing not a scavenger hunt here. We, some of the other parents in Naya's class did a kind of like socially distanced Halloween party thing. So, I mean, it was janky. It was at a park, and instead of going and knocking on houses, there were, like, blankets with candy on them. So, like, a true 2020 Halloween experience.
So weird.
But, like, the kids don't... I mean, like, the kids did expect a Halloween. Like, the kids are old enough to think, like, hey, when are we going to go knocking on houses? And that didn't happen. But they got to see all their classmates and play, and there was trick-or-treating, even though it was kind of makeshift trick-or-treating. So it was really fun. Naya dressed up as a dentist, and Luis dressed up as a giant tooth.
Naya was the dentist.
Yeah.
Luis was the tooth.
Yeah, he was a giant tooth.
God, if ever a tooth needed pulling, huh?
For real. So. For real. It was very cute. It was very cute. And then we also went to the park with Jules. I did a makeshift unicorn costume. I just didn't like plan out a costume ahead of time. So
I have been obsessed. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but you've seen these costumes, right, for dogs where one of the really popular ones is Chucky from Child's Play.
Yes, I've seen those. And it looks like they're walking.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with I'm going to buy them for Tommy and Tuppence. And I was like, you know, it's just after Halloween, so they're probably cheap right now. And they're so cute. Every day I say to Elaine, how about this one? How about this one? So yeah.
My favorite one that is like that one is one that's supposed to be a delivery person or a delivery dog, I guess. And so the dog's front paws will be the legs, but then it has these like makeshift arms holding a little package. So when the dog is running, it almost looks like the package is coming along behind. Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's so cute.
Those things are so... Just before we went live, I was telling Gabby, you've got to follow at Animal Humor or Humor and Animals on Twitter. Social media is like, there's like, mostly magic, right? Mostly gaming and magic. And then there's a sprinkling of politics. And then to balance out all of that, I have like a ton of animal follows, like dog follows, animal humor follows, just trying to like bring balance to all of my
your feed.
Media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love it.
I really like TikTok. I just enjoy browsing the app. It has fun stuff. But honestly, my favorite TikToks are all animal related. Those are always the best ones.
I'm such a boomer. I'm not on TikTok.
Yeah. So this is a funny thing about TikTok, Mashi. I think a lot of people were like, oh, TikTok, that's for the Zoomers. Like, that's for like the really young people. But then people spend so much time at home in quarantine that a lot of people jumped on the TikTok bandwagon. So now there's a lot of people who are like, wow, I feel like an imposter. Like, how do you do, fellow children? Like, that's how I feel on TikTok because I'm so much older than the target audience. But TikTok has cool stuff. Like I'm always sending Luis the fun TikToks that I see.
I mean, I've seen good ones that I think are really great. So I don't doubt that for a second. But it's new social media platforms, they just weird me out. Like, wait, because like for TikTok, for instance, I was like, what's the difference between this and Instagram? Like, isn't it just Instagram? Like, I don't.
Yeah, they're pretty different.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me. I was like, it feels like a video Instagram. So I have not. And then I see there's a lot of lip syncing, right? Like a lot of, wasn't that?
No, I think TikTok gets the reputation for being like a place where people do like choreography and dancing, which there is definitely that. But really, TikTok has a smart algorithm that shows you stuff that you will find interesting. So I get a lot of like animal memes and Among Us memes and cooking recipes and...
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. And like...
Now I'm getting into it.
It's really smart about like the stuff that it shows you. And I, you know, learn to make a bunch of recipes from there. Like people have like cleaning hacks and cooking hacks and stuff like that. So I don't end up in the super young TikTok. Like, in fact, I get a lot of D&D memes on my TikTok because it's just TikTok figured out that I like D&D, which is not hard to do, I guess.
It is so wild when, you know, you say something, just having a conversation like this, and then all of a sudden you start getting served all these ads. And you're like, wait, where did that come from?
Yes. Right? Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, they're always listening, you know.
But, yeah, that's true. Big Brother's always there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I love TikTok, but I know it's not for everybody. And I'm mostly just like browsing it. Like, I don't really make any content for it or anything. I just enjoy like seeing the recipes and like starring them and then trying them later. I've done a few things like that during quarantine. Don't you?
I feel like Julie could be an Instagram pup.
She absolutely could. Oh my God. The dog is so like, she's always like, looking at the camera, you know? She's like one of those dogs that looks at the camera.
So I missed opportunity there.
For sure.
So I don't know. Well, I guess we have to do our read, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
You know what's funny? Because Gabby manages all of our affiliates. If we don't do a good read, it just looks bad, right?
Yeah, like, we always, are you kidding me? I always have the read ready. Dude.
I know you do, I was ready to dive in. We've got this Q&A episode. There's all these great questions we talked about. I was ready to dive in. I was like, wait a minute, we got to do the read. And then I'm like, we never skip that.
Yes, if we don't do the ad read, come on.
Yeah, we've got a real problem.
We do want to do a shout out for the sponsor of the podcast, channelfireball.com.
Oh yeah, those guys.
There's a really cool promotion going on right now called the Ultimate Magic Gift Box. And in fact, you may have seen this around your Twitter sphere with some of your favorite creators, because we actually sent some samples to a lot of the people we work with and they did some awesome unboxings. So if you saw people opening these chaos packs, that's where that came from. So the Ultimate Magic Gift Box comes in three different sizes, and there's a couple of different gift boxes for the holidays. It's just a new offering going into the holiday season. The base box costs $49.99, and it comes with six chaos packs, but then there's also increasing boxes with more promos and more packs inside of them. So it's usually going to have like over $100 worth of value in it, the $50 one, and there's like a $71 and then $130.
They're always double.
There's always,
it's weird. It's always double the value. So the $49.99 is more than $100 mm-hmm. value, and then just scales up. It's always double. So it's weird. And they kind of Voltron up. So all the packs in the 6-pack, they're in the 12-pack. All the packs in the 12-pack, they're in the 24-pack. So it's crazy that way. And I never thought this, but there she is. The 24-pack is the most popular. I thought it was going to be the 6-pack just because of price point, and I was dead wrong.
So if you're just listening to the podcast, you'll hear some nice crinkling of of packs.
You should know. If you listen to Magic Podcast, you should know that sound.
Yeah. Everybody knows that sound. But if you're actually watching, here's some of the sample of the packs that you would get in a box like this, because I recently got mine. I actually did an unboxing on Twitch, so it looks kind of like this, except it would have been packaged nice because I already broke into it. So that's the Ultimate Magic Gift Box. There's also a new player gift box and a commander player gift box if that's more your speed, or if you want to get it to somebody who's new to Magic or somebody who's really into Commander. They all come with really, really cool promos inside, life counters, play mats, that sort of stuff. Really cool gift going into the holiday. So if you want to get yourself some 24 chaos packs to do some drafts with, or just crack them, a bunch of the people we sent them to, they were like, I couldn't resist cracking them, and I opened them, and two people got mana drain, Mashi. Can you believe that?
It was insane.
That's wild. Rigged.
Hashtag rigged. Hashtag planted. You know who bought these just to play with his friends, bought two of them? Martin.
That's so cool. Martin's big into the chaos thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so funny though, because we just figured, oh, well, you know, we're going to use our affiliates. We didn't send any to Martin. And then he's like, I had to buy two of these. They're so awesome. And I'm like,
oh my God.
I would have sent you one if you just messaged me. But he was super excited. Also, just like, shout out to the affiliates. We were talking about this before we went live. We just kind of, this credit to Gabby. She just said, hey, we shouldn't give too much direction. Let's just send them to him and say, hey, guys, do what you want with this. The videos and the clips we've gotten have been insane.
So
you guys gotta
good.
Be watching everybody's streams and check out Twitter. Like, it's so interesting how you can send the same product to a group of people, but influencers, you know, part of the reason they're influencers, I think they have strong personalities, that strong flavor of who they are. Mm. And you can see it kind of permeate this content they're creating, even though they're all talking about the same thing. It's really cool. I mean, you know, obviously you do marketing, but it's just so cool to see like that,
it's
that
so unique cool.
spin on everything.
I wanted to give a big shout out to Ben Ulmer, who is part of the Loading Ready Run squad. And he's an amazing streamer. He plays a lot of Minecraft. He plays a lot of Magic. He plays a variety as well. He just has one of the most wholesome communities on Twitch. And because he's part of the Loading Ready Run crew, he's like very good at the sketches, right? So he, instead of doing a normal unboxing, did a whole sketch for it. It was so good. It was incredible.
It was a message popped up. I'll tell you exactly when I watched this. A message popped up. I'm in a meeting with like Sasso, Darius, just like all the top managers in the company. Dennis goes, stop everything and watch this right now. And I start it while I'm on this call. Like they're on the Zoom call and I'm like, And then I actually say the call, guys, I'm going to drop a link here. You guys just stop. We can come back to this topic. You got to watch.
You just got
to
watch this. It was
and
so
everyone was just
good.
Like, what the heck? I'm like, this is insane. Yeah, that video is pretty ridiculous.
It was really cool. But everybody did such an awesome job with like the way they unbox the stuff. And honestly, after seeing people crack their packs, I kind of want to crack them too. I kind of want to manage too, dude.
Crack them. Can you do me a favor? Can you crack them, but invite Marshall to your stream and just gratuitously open the packs right in front
just in front of his face?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, buddy, what do you think of that? What do you think of that? Huh? So yeah, check out the Ultimate Magic Gift Box. It is an awesome, awesome deal. So available now, obviously, on channelfireball.com.
Awesome. All right, Mosh. We've got some questions. We got a lot of questions, actually. So I wanted to say thank you to everybody who sent us some questions for episode 55. We had a pretty slow Magic News Week. And I know Mosh and I are big fans of doing the grab bag episode. So we got a bunch of people's questions. Thank you to everybody who sent those in. And yeah, we have a lot. So let's just get right into it. Question number one, Squirrel Loot asks, wait, what were you saying, Mosh? Go ahead.
I was going to go into this. I did have one evergreen question for you always, Gabby.
All right.
Are there any updates on the conspiracy front? Cause I felt bad. I was in a draft yesterday. I played one game of Magic yesterday and I won and it was a draft and the guy, gal, they, I gotta normalize, they played land, and we went about 8 turns deep and they never dropped another land. I just thought, oh, victim of the shuffler, what's going on? Only 2 lands? How did this happen? You know, so even when it's not hurting me, I'm still looking at it going, something doesn't feel right about this.
So, okay, so like this is 100% a conspiracy theory, but it's like one of those conspiracy theories that's got enough truth to it that I'm like starting to think that it's real. Like, you know, that's just a perfect conspiracy theory. It's when it's just real enough.
Yeah, just enough.
So shout out to the Lords of Limited, to CFB creators also, Lord Tupperware and
Mr. Metronome,
who on Lords of Limited, their podcast, said that they thought or that they had read on Reddit or something, it doesn't matter where it came from, that the shuffler, when you play best of one, is more likely to give you lands of the same color. So like you'll get 3 lands, but they're going to be all the same color. And I was like, wow, that conspiracy theory, that just obviously sounds made up. And then they play a bunch of Arena, and every time it was like 3 lands of the same color, 3 lands of the same color, 2 lands of the same color, never get your second color. And I would have these decks that had like multiple duels. Like in Limited, it's hard to get multiple duels, like in the normal core set, you know? But I'd have multiple duels and ways to get like dubs colored lands. And every time it was 3 of one colors. I honestly started subscribing to that conspiracy theory. I thought about that
a lot with this last draft deck because I was playing like basically mono red, but I splashed white and I had like 5 planes and then a MDFC white land, right? Kabira Takedown. And multiple times I would open up with 3 planes. And I'm like, what is going on? I have 5 of these in my deck. How do I keep doing this? Mm-hmm. Right. I think I had 5 planes, 11 mountains. And I'm like, why, you know, I keep hitting triple planes lands. And so the thing about great conspiracies is all you see is the confirmation bias. Like, there it is.
Yeah, there it is. It's the ponder bug.
It's got to be true.
The X-Files music plays in the background. Yeah, right. So that's the only one. Yeah, the truth is out there. All right, so Squirrelude asks, what's the biggest / most shocking betrayal you've pulled against a friend in a game of Werewolf, Among Us, D&D, etc.? Also, what was one that you pulled off, that was pulled off against you? Do you have anything like this, Mosh? Because I know you don't play as much like
I don't
Werewolf
play as
Among
much.
Us.
The best one was during our Among Us stream where it came down. I was the imposter and it was Corbin and Jeff. And they started arguing. Corbin's like, we shouldn't vote anyone off. I think, you know, I think we got it. Like, let's just try to finish our task. And I was like, yeah, we should totally do that. And then as soon as we got out, because Jeff at the very beginning of that session was totally sus of me. And I was like, yeah, dude, what are you talking about? Like, because I actually was trying to kill people and couldn't figure out how to kill people. So I was like, right. I haven't done anything, you know? And then at the very end, I finally figured out how to kill people. And so I just literally, we got out of that meeting and I just followed Jeff. And he was still concerned about me. He was like, okay, Corbin, you're right. And I was like, yeah, come on, let's play it out. I think we got it. And I just immediately got out of there. I just followed Jeff and kill him on the spot.
Oh, that's so good.
Great.
I'm sure he was raging.
he was like, I knew it.
Oh,
that's definitely the best one.
That's really good. I have two pretty good examples for this one. I would say for the most shocking betrayal I pulled off against someone was, these were both at Gen Con. And I was at Gen Con with Luis and my friend Jose from college and my friend Molly from Twitch. And in the game, I was the werewolf. And it's like a longer game. Like, it takes like a half hour to play. Like, it's so Among Us is like very quick, right? Werewolf takes a while. And then I thought I had played the game very well. Like, I was very much undercover. And then Molly realizes, he's like, why am I still alive in this game? And why is Gabby still alive in this game? And he realizes that I'm the werewolf and what's happening is I'm being nice to him. So that's how he figures out it's me. But he can't convince anybody else of this because we didn't know some of the other people that we were playing with. So he's freaking out because he realizes he's alive in the game and I'm definitely the werewolf and he can't convince anybody otherwise. And then sure enough, like 2 days later, I kill him off and win the game. So...
Two days later. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Within the game, 2 days later. Yeah. But it was just funny because he was just completely believed everything until he realized we were too late in the game for both of us to be alive. And he's like, no, that has to mean that Gabby's the werewolf. And it 100% was right.
Oh my God. He knew the truth.
The one that was so funny is one that Luis pulled on us. And it was also on Gen Con. We could just tell it was him because just the way he was playing, we know him really well, right? But he manages to pull into this thing called the Circle of Trust, which is the stupidest thing you've ever heard of when it comes to a werewolf game. But there was someone in that game who was saying, no, you're not part of the Circle of Trust. Like, these three people are a Circle of Trust. Luis is in the Circle of Trust and he's 100% the werewolf. So we're freaking out because we can't convince people that it's him. And in that game, there's less to point to, but we just know. We knew. And we play the rest of the game with Luis just completely hoodwinking all of them, making them believe that he's definitely good. And then obviously we lost at the end because he was in the Circle of Truth quotes.
Wow.
It was good. Always,
just by nature, though, I have to say, any game like that, I'm just immediately sus of Luis. So it's like immediately like it's Luis. I think it's more that I want it to be Luis.
It's than because
it
actually you also him. Don't want to get tricked by him, right? Because if you like, it's like shame on me, right? Like, I knew that you were suspicious and then you got me.
yeah. It's like, I'll lose to anyone here, but not you.
Yeah. Luis gets voted off in normal werewolf, not in Among Us. He gets voted off very quickly.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it. It's also, he's so sarcastic and joking. You just never know.
Like, yeah, you can really never know. You can't play too safe.
Exactly. All right. Next up, we have Synthetica. Speaking of rigged, you know, he won our box.
Yeah.
At Synthetica asks, what's a movie you know is bad, but you love to watch anyway?
My answer was pretty quick. Mine's just Hackers.
You know, I can't narrow it down. And I think I can name three movies that you've never seen.
Me, specifically.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that are guilty pleasures. One, Remo Williams, The Destroyer. Maybe you've never even heard of that.
I've never even heard of this movie.
Very fun movie. Awful.
Okay.
Really good movie. Number two, Roadhouse. Patrick Swayze.
No, I know this movie, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
I like Patrick Swayze a lot. Yeah.
It's so bad. And then finally, Val Kilmer's greatest film, Real Genius.
You went deep, Mashi. I haven't even heard of two of these movies.
I love bad movies. I could have done a whole like top 100 bad movies I love to watch. Those three, I mean, and I was convinced Real Genius was a good movie until I rewatched it with Elaine and she was like,
you're like, this movie's
I still
and
love
Elaine
it.
Suddenly like, what, when does the movie get good?
Yeah, she's like, there's been a few of those. Gross Point Blank was another one. I love that movie. And she was like, not really into it. I don't think it's aged well. And I watch it. I'm like, you know, you're really too into a bad movie when I watch it. I'm like, I don't get it. It's still wonderful. What do you mean? This movie's amazing. Like, what are you talking about? You know? So those are my three. Great question, though. Great question.
Yeah, I liked it. I was trying to think of other like bad movies, and I feel like I've watched a lot of scary, like, it's not even the movie that I want to rewatch. I just watch a lot of really bad movies because I watch scary movies that are bad. Because scary movies tend to be awful, you know?
Yeah.
And my best friend and I growing up, that was our thing. We watched scary movies together.
What? I did not know that.
Yeah. So I've seen like a million scary movies and I've seen so many bad ones. And like we went into it knowing that it was going to be terrible, you know? But
that's the joy of horror, like schlocky horror films. That's the joy of it.
Yeah. I mean, basically the answer for me could also be any movie past like Saw 1. Because I saw the next 8 and they were all terrible.
There are sequels to Salt?
Saw.
Oh, Saw. I thought you said Salt.
Saw.
I can't do any of the torture porn. I cannot.
They're like, really bad, dude. They're really just awful. Like,
I can't. It really makes me like cringe. I can't do it.
It's really incredible, actually, to the creativity of the people who put on that franchise. Because in the original Saw movie, like, Saw, the guy who was like the villain in the movie is like supposed to be dead. So they made 8 sequels, by the way.
Yeah, they
managed to do that. It's incredible. Yeah. Like multiple movies are like the same movie filmed from different perspectives. I don't even know how they did it, but they're all so bad. And I'm sorry if somebody out there is like the biggest Saw franchise series fans. Trust me, I love it too. I went to the movie theater every time it came out, but I can't delude myself into thinking that the movies were good.
Yeah, you just because you love it doesn't mean it's good. And yeah. Just because it's bad.
Yeah. I think they're all really bad.
Wow, I did not realize that about you. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a scary movie buff, dude.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Mark Smith asks, how do we get more Mashi playing at hashtag Among Us? Time. And I got to get comfortable. Like, I felt like we played for hours. I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And so all I would do when I was the a crew member is like, I'm just going to try to do all these tasks. And then I would die and then like, I'm just going to keep trying to
I'm
do
just going
to
keep doing my tasks. Do.
And then when I was a killer, I couldn't figure out for like the first hour, how do I kill people? And I think it was a setting on my laptop or something because I was like trying to like kill people like right next to them and I couldn't do it. I like literally was the imposter running around trying to kill people. And then people get mad like, Mashi keeps following me, but he hasn't killed me. What's going on? It's like, Mashi can't figure out how to kill you. Otherwise, you'd be dead. So if I figure that, I think it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think Among Us has a little bit of a learning curve. And then once you get past that hump, it's like really fun to play. But while you're still learning the mechanics of the game and learning kind of like where the map, like where you are in the map and that sort of thing, it can be hard to pay attention to the real game, which is where did I see people, like trying to deduce who the killer is. Like you can't really do that when you're still focusing on like figuring out your tasks and what you're doing and where you are in the map and like how to move and or how to kill people, right? You didn't even know how to do that when you were the imposter.
I mean, the location thing is real because people be like, Mashi, where were you? I was like, I don't know.
You know,
it's like, well, I saw Gabby
and
outside.
I played Among Us. We got an imposter squad together when we did the CFP podcast game and we almost won and you didn't know how to kill people yet. It was actually pretty impressive. Yeah.
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 But part of it too is like half the time we're in the Discord chat and I'm like talking and I'm muted. Like, why isn't Mashi saying anything? I'm like, oh God.
I'm sorry. I muted myself. Whoops. Yeah. Some real boomer vibes, Mash.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was really fun. I had a really good time with that Among Us game. Luca Jordan asks, what are your favorite MTG illustrations? Top 3, maybe? Looking forward to the podcast.
Well, in classic Magic TV fashion, I actually have 3 and an honorable mention.
Mm.
And I wonder if you know all the... I think one of them you may not know art for, but I think 3 of them you will know. Number one, actually in no particular order. I love, and I know this is an unpopular thing, I love the art for Stasis. I really like the art for Stasis too.
It's really cool.
Just awesome.
The one with the dog that's like worshiping something and like the guys bowing.
It's scaled. It's like Anubis. Like it's like Anubis, like this Egyptian theme. And it's not Anubis, but it's Osiris who measures your heart.
Also, isn't it Anubis or am I losing it?
Yeah, I think it is Anubis on there, so it should be Osiris, but it's just a great random piece of art. Like, it's actually a piece of art that I would buy and have I like magic art, but unabashedly you could show it anywhere. It's awesome.
It's really cool. It does not really look like magic art. Like, I would think it's some sort of contemporary or like Egyptian inspired like contemporary piece or something like that.
Yeah, I love Stasis. Let's see. Gilderbairn Have you seen the art for Gilder Baron?
I don't think so.
Gilder Baron has some of the coolest art. I love the art. It's just fun. It's just a cool little piece. It looks awesome. Kind of, I want to say like Where the Wild Things Are vibes to it, but I think it's a really, really cool piece. And I want to say it's Eventide. I'm not sure, but I've always thought that was a cute little piece of art. And then finally, I do really, really love the art for Pillage. I love RKF. I love his feel, like the way he does, like very, very vivid, like bah!
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's color. A very distinct art style.
You know, it's like he's done Arcane Denial. I mean, there's a lot of RKF art out there. But Pillage, obviously one of my favorites. And I will honorable mention, I have always loved the art for Preacher Out of the Dark, Quentin Hoover.
I do know that card, yeah.
Yeah, and that art is great, and it's very, very much, very evocative of a preacher. Like, when you look at it, you're like, holy crap, he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it. So that's those are my three, plus an honorable mention.
I like it. That was real Magic TV answer.
Yeah.
I think for me also, in no particular order, I love the art of Ambush Viper. I know that's like kind of like the cop-out. I mean, I literally have the art behind me. That's the original art, which I hunted down for years, by the way. It took me a long time to find it.
Wait, that's the original art?
Yeah, that's original art.
Oh my God, I thought that was a print.
It's original Holy art. Crap. Yeah, yeah. Wow. That was a gift from me to me.
That's a good gift. Sometimes those are the best gifts.
I spent years tracking down the art, and nobody knew where it was because the artist didn't do that much magic art moving forward. So it was just like kind of unknown where it was. And then at a GP Vegas, I want to say like 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, there was a magic art exhibit. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Wow, there's some stories there, clearly. Yes. But anyway, so there was that little, it was basically in a side room at GP Vegas where you could basically go in and take a look at all this original art, and collectors had basically lent their art for the weekend so people could come check it out. And word got through the grapevine, and they're like, Gabby, there's Ambush Vipers, like the actual Ambush Vipers at this thing. And I'm like, holy moly, I need to find out who owns it and I need to buy it from them. Mm-hmm. And shout out to the person, I forget their name at this point because it's been a couple of years, but they knew that this card meant a lot to me, and they were super nice to make a deal with, and I ended up buying it from them after GP Vegas was done, and I basically ended up getting it like 6 months later or something. So
that's awesome.
It was super cool. I mean, I was so happy to track it down because I got in touch with the artist, and the artist didn't know where it was.
I don't know where. Yeah. So for me, I will say the piece of art I've been looking for years is the original art for Ancient Hydra by Scott Fisher. He doesn't know where it is. And so if anyone can find the original art for Ancient Hydra, has a line on it, let me know, because that's the piece that I want.
That's really cool.
It's more what the card means to me. Obviously, I didn't name it in my favorite magic art, but there's a lot of emotional investment in that card.
Right.
So I would love to find
I think it's fine
card.
To have a card that's like a mix of investment, like, because that's kind of how I feel about Ambush Viper, right? It's not that I think this is like the best piece of artwork in the whole wide world, but it means so much to me. I love the art because that's part of what made me fall in love with a card, plus the mechanics, right? So anyway, that was Ambush Viper. The other two are, I love Ryan Yee. Ryan Yee has done a lot of really beautiful artwork. He has a very also like unique style. Like when you see his stuff, like you can always tell that it's him. It's always got this like ethereal look. Always looks beautiful. He did the art for Parasolini, which is a card I think from, it's Innistrad or Dark Ascension, I'm not sure. And it's this like giant moon in the sky. It's like a 3-mana card, destroys all enchantments, but it's just beautiful. It looks like you were camping and you were to take a look at the sky and you'd see this giant moon. Like, that's what it looks like.
It is. Gabby actually showed it to me before we went live, and I was like, holy crap, this is gorgeous.
Like, this is beautiful, right?
Yes.
I have five. He also did the Expeditions fetches. So he did like Arid Mesa, Vern Catacomb, Scalding Tarn. And I bought like giant, like big prints. Like, they're about this big for my living room when I was at some GP, and then I framed it, and that's been the artwork in my house for a long time. It looks really cool because you can't really tell that it's magic art when you just see it normally. So it just looks like artwork, but they're the fetches. So,
and I think people know him because I met him at a GP. I was like, Ryan, yeah, I think he did Dig, right? I think he did Dig.
Yeah, he did Dig. He did Dig. Yeah. He did the promo art for Judges Familiar. I think he did Baleful Strix. He did Parasolini. He did all the Expedition fetches.
ECD.
He did a CD ECD's too. That's cool. He's super talented. He always has a ton of stuff. He did a bunch of Kaladesh cards that were really beautiful too. Die Young, I think, was one of them. So next up, we have.
Wait, you only gave us two.
You're right. Wings of or Gift of Orzhova.
Gift. Oh, that one is so good. That is good. Just amazing. Gosh, the stained glassing on
it. It's a person standing on top of a a building, a cathedral or something. I think this is in Ravnica I think it's in the original or Return to Ravnica. I think.
Yeah, it is. It is gorgeous. Oh man,
and it's this person who has these giant wings in the behind them, and the wings are like stained glass wings. The card used to give +2/+2 on lifelink and flying or something like that. I forget exactly what, but it's just some of the most beautiful art ever.
Flying +1/+1 and lifelink. It is gorgeous. Johannes Voss. But yes, that is, as soon as you said it, I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. That piece of art is gorgeous. Good.
It's really good.
All right. Hilky Hope asks, favorite game released in 1993?
So I had to look it up. So Magic obviously came out on 1993. So technically, I guess if we're going by that, I'm going to say Magic. But if we're going to go with non-Magic answers, my two picks were either Star Fox or Illusion of Gaia.
For me, it's just Magic. I didn't have any video game systems at the time, so I didn't play very many. I've never been a big video game guy, so Magic for sure. I skipped over our list here, Gabby. So, and I think it's a really good one. At PabGab?
PabGab?
Maybe it's PabGab, yeah. At PabGab asks, what are your three predictions for Kaldheim? What are you looking forward to most in the set? Kaldheim prediction time, Gabby.
So, we kind of talked about this a little bit before the podcast. I don't have three predictions exactly as much as I would predict that Kaldheim is going to have some Theros-like vibes, and that I think there's going to be god-like creatures in Kaldheim. Or I guess I would be surprised if that is in the flavor. So I think we might see stuff like legendary equipment and gods and really mythological-based stuff for the set if I think they're taking it in the direction that they're going. That would be my prediction.
I'm 100% with you. I think legendary equipment, Mjolnir, I think is such a huge part of Norse mythology. And you can kind of, I love the idea of and if it's legendary, you kind of make it expensive, do what you want. But every time the creature attacks that's equipped with it, you bolt a target. That's so very on point for Thor and Mjolnir. And I think that's amazing. So I think something like that is really going to be in there. Norse mythology is very, very steeped. I mean, Greek mythology is too, but you have the Norns. The fates are super big in Norse mythology. So maybe there's something with fate counters or something like that.
Or maybe the fates are something to do with a story in Kaldheim. Yeah. It could be that the story is centered around the fates or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be great. Norse mythology is wonderful. I think Neil Gaiman just did a whole thing, not just, I think it's probably about a year or two ago, did his whole take on Norse mythology. I haven't read it, but I love everything by Neil. So I'm going to recommend it without even reading it. So those are two big ones. I agree with Gabby. I think there should be a god feel to it, similar to Theros, where we have the Nordic gods in there somewhere. And I actually think it's a really good mechanic. I like the kind of whole gods, and they turn on with a certain amount of devotion, and I think that's just that plays really, really well.
Yeah, I think the way Theros played out, I will say that I was not a fan of the gods that you can never get rid of ever, which I guess is flavorful for a god, but honestly, gameplay wise was pretty miserable to deal with, but there's clearly a bunch of ways. The original Theros gods were very good in that they were super strong, but there were ways that you could kill them. And there were ways that you could get rid of them. So it didn't feel like... With the gods that tuck themselves back into your library, it was always
that was the worst and limited, too.
It
was
not fun. It was here we go again. Oh, what is this? They topped Deku Ketra? Weird how that happened.
Yeah. Oh, that was miserable. But yeah, I think that there's going to be... I think you hit the nail on the head. There's going to be Therosian vibes through Kaldheim, which I'm excited about. I think that's a good thing, to be honest with you. So, wow. Gabby, we did some work. We improved the world of Magic.
Oh my god!
At @Cullen_Ian asks, now that you've played however many times, does the card art matter in the vintage cube? Well, here's some news at Cullen Ian. We changed the world.
And by we changed the rules, we mean that we talked about it on the podcast, and by the time we published it, the rules had changed.
The rumors got out, Gabby.
Yeah.
Someone at Wizards was like,
someone Magic was like, wait, Magic FM is going to be making an episode about this? We best get ahead of it.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
All jokes aside, we talked about it in the previous episode about how much having like the nostalgic artwork for Cube matters because it's hard to follow otherwise. And, you know, a lot of people on Twitter complained to Magic Online saying like, hey, the Cube is unplayable. Like, I can't follow it. And we went in depth. If you want to hear like that in-depth discussion, you can go to the previous episode, episode 54, where we talked about the importance of why it's better to have the old art in a thing like Cube. But essentially, Magic Online kind of went back on it and they reduced the alternate art by like 70%. So there's still some alternate art, but as it turns out, having, you know, dessert for breakfast, not such a good idea. It was too much. And so they did go back on it, and there was really only one day where people got to do the drafts with a fully like blinged out cube. I will say that the two drafts that I did with a fully blinged out cube were like not very pleasant. I those were the drafts that I did, and then immediately the next day we recorded, and that's when they went back on it. So it's not like I drafted it a million times, but it was actually going to impact my desire to draft it more just because it was really hard to follow. There were a bunch of picks I missed because I was like, oh, I guess I'll take this. And someone was like, I think there was a Metamorph in that pack. I'm like, really? I didn't see it.
Yeah. Well, kudos for Wizards because they're getting a lot of feedback about these changes, and they moved very quickly.
It took like less than a day for them to change the stuff.
Good on them. Now we just got to work on those Supreme drafts, those vintage Supreme drafts.
Oh, no. Did you see? Oh, my gosh. That's bearer. No. I'm going to be the bearer of good news again for Magic FM. They are going to have vintage cube this Christmas. Nice. That was the other change. So they're still going to do Supreme draft, but now they're also putting cube up for much longer. So we're going to get vintage cube starting on the 23rd or 24th. So like literally around Christmas, all the way up until like 1 week before Kaldheim releases.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? Kudos to Wizards. I think the community said something and they did it. So
people just love vintage cube. People love the cube.
Let me tell you something. I know plenty of people who work in that building in Renton and they love it in there too. There's a lot of people who just people who play Magic love that, whether they work for Wizards or not. And they're very invested in, I think, making that a great product.
Right.
So good on them. Good on them.
No, I thought that was awesome. So that's some good news and a follow up from last week's episode. Swag Leap asks, when you get ready to head outside, which process do you follow? Sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or sock, shoe, sock, shoe? Mush.
This mystifies me. It's sock, sock, shoe, shoe every time. I don't know of anyone who does sock, shoe. Like that feels weird to me.
Me too. But then I was also thinking like Naya definitely does sock, shoe. So I do sock, sock, shoe, shoe. But I didn't even realize like you could do it a different way. Like it kind of blew my mind to think about people doing sock, shoe.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. When I go to spin, because I go in flip-flops and then I put my socks on and then my spin shoes on, even then I think I do sock, shoe, shoe. Yeah, I can't think of an example where I do sock, shoe.
Oh, wait, I got it. I actually have it. When you go to the beach and you're walking in the sand and then you need to like wash your feet because you're putting tennis shoes back on, not sandals, tennis shoes. If you've ever been in that situation, which is maybe when you're like touring somewhere, you will wash your foot, put a sock on, put a shoe on, and then you can stand on that shoe, then do the other one.
I'll take your word for it, Gabby. I live in flip-flops. I'm literally right now, I have indoor flip-flops on my feet right now.
Yeah, you and Luis are the same. It'll be like snowing out and Luis is walking around in flip-flops. I don't understand. Meanwhile, I'm here with like 40 layers and I'm always cold wearing boots.
I've done this many, many times. Flip-flops in snow are no problem. Flip-flops in rain are miserable. Rain is much worse than snow for a flip-flop wearer. Just putting it out there. Because when I was in Boston for school, flip-flops every day. So unless it was raining. So there you go.
That's wild.
At Ruben, I love this. It's roux, like a roux for cooking. Like, you know, when you're making a curry.
Yeah, roux.
Roux. At Ruben asks, Was there a light bulb moment, a light bulb card that made you fall in love with MTG early on, or made you realize how much MTG had to discover? Like for me, seeing the mind-blowing Faceless Butcher stack trick, bounce blink Faceless Butcher to exile its target forever, made me want to explore more.
That's really cool. I have like two answers to this. Do you, unless, are you ready with your answer, Mosh? If
not, I'm ready with mine. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Okay. So part of the reason that I love Ambush Viper isn't just because I think the flavor is really good, is because it had a lot of elements from this question in there. Like when I saw Ambush Viper and understood that the mechanics of the card synced up to the idea that this was an ambushing viper, it was just like, whoa, that's like, it was a really like eye-opening moment where I felt like, oh my God, there's more to this game than just like the card does something. It was like, this is very flavorful. BK used this as an example to explain what flavor was to me because I didn't understand. Because he was saying, oh, the flavor of this set is really good. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. What does that mean? And as we were talking about Innistrad, and he's like, well, flavor is like the adjacent stuff, like the thing that's fun about it, the thing that it resembles, like it's supposed to be about vampires and werewolves and spooky things. And like what's the name of the mechanic from Innistrad that, Morbid. Like the whole, the whole idea that you should be scared of what's happening out there because you might, you know, get a bigger werewolf or a bigger pig or whatever is going on in the set. And so I was like, okay, I kind of get it. And then he shows me this Ambush Viper as an example. And I was like, oh, like that made it sink in for me. But mechanics wise, it's actually, this is random. It was actually Boros Reckoner that like,
oh my
That kind of did it for me, because Boros Reckoner, if you are not familiar with this card, it's this cow. I guess it's like a bull. I don't really know.
Bull. I would say it's a bull.
It's a bull, probably.
Kind of think Minotaur flavor.
How's yes, that? It's like a Minotaur, basically.
Yeah.
That had a cool ability, which was if it took damage, it would redirect that damage to any target. So that sounds cool, but when I was a brand new Magic player, like the concept of that was really weird because this card could also get first strike. So sometimes you could make it not take any damage, depending on how you blocked, or you could purposefully make it take damage to redirect. And there were all these combo decks that try to deal damage to Boros Reckoner, and then you could redirect that to your opponent to just one-shot kill them. And this was the first card where I was like, wow, there's like so much going on in this card that really kind of got me super hooked on Magic.
So for me, this is old school, and there's maybe some cards that you don't remember or know, is I used to have a deck that was Nether Shadow, Ashen Ghoul, Breeding Pit, and Lord of the Pit, and it used Animate Dead.
Sure.
And what you wanted to do was find a way to cheat out your Lord of the Pit with an Animate Dead. Right. So sometimes stupidly, this was very early on in I had no idea what to do here. And stupidly, sometimes I would just keep seven, draw, and then pitch Lord of the Pit into the graveyard. But it was the first time I remember thinking about trying, and you couldn't do this as much now. Now the graveyard is completely open. It's clearly a zone you'd play Magic in.
Yeah.
This is an era that like, you know, you had Ice Age was out because I remember this deck having Ashen Ghoul. But it wasn't as open an area to play
in. It probably felt like you were like doing something super duper like crazy. Advanced. Yeah. Like, wow, we're really playing like 5D chess over here.
Exactly. And Animate Dead was there, and Resurrection was a card that was wiped. This was a mono black deck. But I remember that like really running Animate Dead and trying to like say like the graveyard was a resource. Like, if my Nether Shadow or my Ashen Ghoul went to the graveyard, that was okay because I could still... Breeding Pit just produced tokens that you could sack to your Lord of the Pit. But it was like, great. It's not a detriment to me. I haven't lost that creature for the game. In fact, my deck is designed to kind of like hoodwink people into thinking that's a bad thing when it's not. And so that was a moment where I was like, oh, I don't have to write the graveyard off as like, my creature's dead, it's gone, it's over now. I'm actually trying to play into that and use that. The deck was terrible, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But it was a moment where I thought about, oh my gosh, this is something you can do in the game of Magic. And that very, very early on for me. That have to be like freshman or sophomore year. So like talking like 93, 94.
That's so cool. Yeah. I would say that one of the cards that still has that for me these days is when I cube and I have a combination of like Sneak Attack and Survival of the Fittest. Those two cards in combination, it still do that same, like they have that same feel for me where I'm just like, there's so much you can do with those two cards together.
What a Zoomer. In my day, it was recurring nightmare, but okay.
I mean, I love the recurring nightmare decks in Cube too, but I think Survival of the Fittest and through the Breach so or something like Sneak Attack are just so cool.
Immediate gratification.
That's awesome. So Elkin asks, what's your favorite, if any, non-sanctioned MTG format?
Jeez, I have no idea. I don't play very much non-sanctioned Magic. I mean, Cube is a non-sanctioned MTG format. I don't know if we want to exempt that, because I think that's probably a pretty clear answer.
It's weird because even though it is non-sanctioned, it's like probably the most popular non-sanctioned, because Commander is sanctioned, right?
Commander sanctioned.
Yeah, okay. So I guess Cube has to be the most popular non-sanctioned format. I don't think it counts.
Yeah, I'll go deep here. And I used to, you know, I come from an era when you played Block. And I used to really enjoy playing Block as kind of like a preview for the new Type 2 format. And I can say Type 2 and actually have that be the correct term here. But I played a lot of Block. Played a lot of Skies in Mercadian Mass Block. You know, we also had Rebels in that block. And so there used to be Block Pro Tours. I don't think it's a good format, but I really, and I'm glad, and you can't even do it anymore because blocks don't exist. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy playing Block. Like, it was something that we played a lot in my LGS when I was in college. I don't think they should bring it back, and they can't. But, and then there was also a format, which I'm sure you've never played or heard of, called BYOB, which was bring your own block, where you choose the first set of a block, the second set really of good a block, name. And the third set of a block, right? And then, but all block bannings, you know, are still in there. So if you chose Tempest, Curse Scroll was banned, you know? So things like that, you probably didn't even know Curse Scroll was banned in Tempest Block Constructed, but it is. And so that was kind of a fun thing. That was really an invitational format, the Magic Invitational. But every once in a while, we just putz around with it at our LGS, and it was really Magic for fun.
Right. So. Yeah, I don't think I have one. I mean, most of mine are going to be some Cube variant, and that I don't think that even really counts for this question.
I agree. It's too easy. But yeah, Cube would be where I go. If that counted, I think that's both what we just
It'd be easy Cube for both of us for sure.
Yeah. Wow, follow-up question from @Ruben again. It's Friday the 13th. Happy Friday the 13th.
Spooky.
It's Friday the 13th. What was your luckiest break? Not just a sweet, brutal top deck, but in life, either unwitting, i.e. missed a bust and consequently met a lifelong pal, or witting, i.e. applied for something you felt you had no shot at succeeding and it changed your life.
So it can be unluckiest or luckiest too, right? It seems like it.
Yeah. Go luckiest. Come on. There's enough.
I have a pretty good one.
I have a good one too.
All right. So do you want to go first?
Sure. Somewhere around 1995. I was a sophomore. I remember I was a sophomore because I was in chem. And I had that with my good friend, Graham. And we that class was kind of a joke. And we would just sit there for the opening lecture. And then our teacher would be like, go ahead and work on whatever. And we'd go to one of the lab tables and play Magic. That's what we did every day. It's like literally what we did. I would have failed that class if our chemistry teacher, she was a video major at UCLA. And so Graham and I just made a bunch of extra credit videos and we got an A in the class, even though I failed. I failed the midterm. I got a C- on the final, got an A in the class. So much extra credit. So round about that time, we heard, oh, hey guys, the place, you know, if you somewhere in the Magic grapevine was like, oh yeah, there's this really cool place to buy cards. The best Magic singles. It's a place called Superstars Sports. It's called Superstars. They sell a bunch of sports stuff. But if you go there and you got to look for the kid, because there's an old man there and there's a kid. If you go there, you got to talk to the kid and he's got these binders and stuff. And that's how I met John.
How long ago was this, dude?
1995.
That's a long time ago. There. Holy moly.
And the funny thing is, since we've become very close friends, right? We've talked, we definitely interacted before that, not knowing each other, because I used to work for my friend's store called A Wrinkle in Time, and he used to go there every Magic night.
Oh,
and we didn't know each other.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, but 95 is really where it happened. That's the first time I met, really kind of formally met Sasso. And obviously that's changed my life, you know? One of the most impactful relationships I've had, one of the luckiest breaks I've ever had is going to that store for the first time, meeting John, becoming a regular there, and then, you know, from going from a customer to a friend and now kind of business partners and lifelong friends. He was the best man at my wedding, and easily, you know, one of the most impactful people in my life in the most positive way. So that is, I think, one of the luckiest breaks of my life.
That's really cute. I love it. Mine's actually similar to yours. So if you know me personally, I am a tryhard. Like I'm such a tryhard. But part of it is that one of the things that my parents instilled on me was a very good work ethic growing up. And I wasn't one of those kids. You know how like there's a ton of people who in high school they were super smart and they could just coast really easily? That was not me. I worked really hard for it. And Mashi suddenly like pulls that collar. That was not me. I always worked really hard in school. And I was studious, and I think I did a really good job with my SATs and stuff, and I ended up going to a really good university. I went to the University of Notre Dame. And while I was there, I did the best that I could to get like good internships every summer, and I got a lot of work experience, but I also am international, right? I'm Ecuadorian. So it was hard to, if you are international, it's hard to get hired to do a job here in the US because you have to get sponsored for an H-1B visa. And that's like one of the biggest hurdles you have to overcome if you want to try to immigrate here. And so despite doing really well in school and having a ton of work experience, I graduated in 2009, which was during the housing crash here in the US.
That was a bad time.
The literal worst time possible to graduate, probably second only to graduating around coronavirus. Like, somewhere between those two spots is probably the worst time to have graduated college. And what it meant is that I had these internships and job stuff lined up that all got pulled. It all got pulled at the last second. And if you are an international student who's no longer going to college, good luck.
Go home.
So that's what happened to me. And I went from having like a really good job lined up to having absolutely nothing, no internship, no nada. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? And so then my now ex and I, we started just doing stuff for fun. We made a website, and the website was called gizmehope.com. And it was like a chicken soup for the soul sort of thing. That website blew up. It went viral. It became super popular because at the time there was this other website called F My Life, like short for, you know.
Actually, there's a book. I have the F My Life book. They made a book from that website. Yeah, so I'm familiar with that.
So the Gives Me Hope was supposed to be a response to that site, where instead of just like depressing stuff always, it was supposed to for people to share like good things happening to them or how they overcame. And it was honestly like in my life, one of the coolest things I've ever done, because it had such an incredible community of people who were really supportive of each other, who found a community when they were going through trying times, whether they like lost someone really important to them, or they were sick, or they were going through a divorce, or they were dealing with loss. And it was this really incredible community that we created, that to this day I think is like probably one of the most meaningful things I will ever do in my life. And
Gabby, we need a reboot.
I know, it's really good. I love Gives Me Hope so much. It's not online anymore. You can probably find it on like the Wayback Machine, but that is what it was back then. And GMH went on to become a book. It did really well. It sold really well. The book got stocked in a bunch of hospitals in the US. I don't know. Like, this was a long time ago, so I don't know if it's still stocked, but they were just really inspirational stories. Like, it was like the sort of book that you would cry reading it, right? And because this blew up, we spun off a bunch of websites that were like variants of Gives Me Hope, and that's how OMG Facts also got started, and bunch of other websites. And that became the company that I worked at formerly before becoming a streamer. So if all of the economy hadn't gone terribly and I lost every job opportunity I had, we wouldn't have started that, which means I also wouldn't have started playing Magic, because I started playing Magic because some of the people we hired for the company, Dose, they played Magic. And that's how I got into it.
That's
wild,
crazy.
Right?
It's funny how these things work out, right?
It's unbelievable. Butterfly effect, where I see this turning point in my life where if I had gotten to keep my corporate job, I would just still be working corporate job. And I've like really liked the way things turned out differently. I am happy the trajectory my life took, even though it's been like a pretty different trajectory, especially work related.
I feel the exact same way about Big Law, because I had a Big Law job coming out of law school. The economy, so I came out in 06, and the economy was just starting to tank right then. And in 07, 08 was just like the worst year to graduate from law schools. And so I ended up getting laid off. And I was extremely lucky because they laid off a bunch of attorneys in waves at my old firm. Mm-hmm. And because I was in wave one, they only did first year's wave one, right? The subsequent waves included, I had the most generous severance package they had. I didn't realize how lucky. You don't feel lucky when it happens, but then when more of my friends started getting laid off,
and you suddenly are like, "Well, that thing I got doesn't look so bad now."
That's great, but I often think like I enjoyed practicing law, and at a big firm, you get paid a lot of money to do it, and I often think about that being like, "Crap, if they hadn't laid me off, I could still be there, and I'd be like a miserable bastard who's like entitled and awful." I mean, I have these fears about myself, and like that industry can play into it, especially when you're making a lot of money,
right,
and doing a lot of things. And so it's just like, God, I'm so glad I'm not in that life. I mean, I don't, no disrespect to big firm attorneys. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about my own proclivities.
Right. This is your
and
experience and also your relationship to practicing law.
Yeah. So I'm it's funny how those things at the time but the day I got laid off, I was walking through LA till 5 a.m.
Oh.
And you want to know I got drunk. A bunch of my attorney friends took me out. We got hammered. And then I just started walking, you know. And the worst part is I ended up at Pink's Hot Dogs. And I was like, I'm hungry again. I'm going to buy a hot dog. And I walk up there and it was 3 a.m. and they had just closed. And I just started crying. I was like, what is going on? Is that
the worst? You're like, not even the hot dog. Not even the hot dog.
How is this happening? So that happened to me. And but you know what? You're right. These things happen and sometimes they end up being like, and maybe we just justify it in our minds. I don't know, but I'm happy doing that.
Oh,
and I really feel that.
I know there's a ton of stuff that you can justify, but I see that as a pretty pivotal turn in my life where I am very happy. Like at the time, it seemed like the worst thing possible. And in hindsight, it was like, I couldn't have gotten luckier. I just didn't know.
Totally. Yeah. I feel that so much. Like we're so one-to-one on this. Like I look back on that and I'm like, my God, thank God.
That was like the luckiest thing to have ever happened.
Yeah,
like,
right. No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Yeah. You want to squeeze one more in here?
Yeah, I think we can go through like, this one's very quick. Luis is known, so this is from Vlad Weber. Luis is known for his love of burritos. You're a known calzone connoisseur. What is Mashi's food of choice?
I think, you know what? I'm going to say this. I love acai bowls. And I think a lot of people, Gabby, you've experienced this, but I really love acai bowls. And given the opportunity, they're calorie bombs, so I can't eat them all the time. But it is one of my foods of choice. And when I'm in a new area, I'll look on DoorDash or on Yelp and be like, where can I get an acai bowl around here? And there used to be something I did at every USGP period.
I'd be like, I've been on the receiving end of the acai bowls, which I also really like, by the way. So I'm not complaining. I just have seen it.
Yeah, I love acai bowls. So
and
that's
this,
probably it.
This will be the end of our questions. Ready? Mitya Raman asks, what's your go-to comfort food?
That's it. I mean, it's funny. I think I have to say for now and this is really because of Elaine, because, you know, for those who don't know, my wife Elaine's Vietnamese. I was not a huge pho consumer back in the day. And I get a lot of pho now. That's probably our go-to comfort food. Also instant ramen, which is very, very similar. Maybe the instant ramen is a bigger hit because I actually found my childhood that my mother used to buy instant ramen, which you can't find on the shelves. I have to order it. I have to order cases of it from Amazon.
Oh,
and I actually have a case in the closet next to me. So that's probably it. Like I'll just go, I'll crack an egg in it. And
love cracking the egg in the ramen. That's great.
Oh my God. It's so perfect. It's so
criminally underrated. People don't do it enough.
You absolutely should.
Yeah.
Strong recommend. All right, Gabby, how about you?
So I have two answers, I think. The first one is like comfort food, which is my comfort food from Ecuador, where I'm from, which is that it's a traditional kind of food called, it's going to sound so weird, it's called chuchucadas. Chuchucadas, which is not even Spanish. It's like a Quechuan word.
Uh-huh. Sounds good though.
I know, it's really good. It's a combination plate, so it's not one thing, but it's like it's like the traditional Highlands food, which is potato pancakes and like fritada, which is like a pork, like a kind of like a pork thing. It's pork. It's basically pork. It's just cooked different.
How is it cooked?
It's roasted, but it's cubed. Like the way you eat it, it's cubed. And the spicing and the seasoning is like very unique. Mm. I've never had it like that outside of Ecuador. And it comes with a lot. It comes with a lot of like corn-based stuff, which doesn't even really have names here. It's hard to describe, like hominy kind of, and like crunchy corn kind of, like corn nuts kind of. Ugh. These are just analogies because these are not actually available here, you know? Mm-hmm. And lima beans with cheese and stuff like that. It's not exactly lima beans. It's another thing. Okay. These are just comparisons. Because really, a lot of these don't even exist here.
Right,
so
right.
That plate of this comfort food is like probably my favorite meal and the thing that I miss, like the food that I miss the most from Ecuador. But if we're just talking about food that I can make, it's probably just like spicy Italian sausage soup that I make that is just a delicious crock pot soup that I love. It's like my go-to recipe. I love it. And it tastes a little bit like the Supa Toscana from Olive Garden. That's like, it's supposed to be like a copycat of that soup. It's really good though. It's really good.
Ship a recipe.
I'll ship a recipe. I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah, that will be our only note for this episode. Yeah. It'll be the Supa Toscana.
Like actually your Ecuadorian dish does remind me, like when I'm in Japan, my kind of go-to comfort food is curry. I love Japanese curry.
Oh, so good.
Very different. And when I was a kid, my mother, it's very inexpensive to make. So we had a lot of it. And my mother used to make it all the time. And that is a very much a like taste like home.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love Japanese curry. It's really good. It's also, not that hard to make.
No. You just buy the roux and Bob's your uncle.
And then you put the protein in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Super cool.
So, wow, this was an awesome episode. We had so many questions. I'm so sorry if we didn't get to your questions. I'll try to chime in on Twitter if we can get some answers to people. But thank you so much. It's always awesome when our listeners do this, right? It's so crazy.
Yeah, I love it. I never mind when we have a slow news week because it just means we get to do listener questions, and those are always really fun.
Yeah. So thank you so much. We're up against it here. Thanks for hanging. Thanks for asking questions. I hope you liked our answers. Keep in mind, Gabby mentioned earlier in the episode, but if you're listening on the podcast, hit subscribe. We appreciate that. But there's a whole video component. So check it out on channelfireball.com. Check it out on YouTube. But there is a video component where Gabby and I are actually talking to each other and you can watch us talk to each other. Say hi. Yeah, there you go. You can find our podcast on Twitter at @MagicFMPodcast. You can find me on Twitter. I'm the guy on the left, Mashi Scanlon at Mashi Scanlon. She's Gabby Spartz at Gabby Spartz. You can find her on social media there or on twitch.tv/Gabby Spartz. Check out channelfireball.com. Any purchases you make, use that code MAGICFM. Sign up for CFB Pro. Use that code MAGICFM. That helps support the podcast and we do appreciate it. Thanks for hanging this week. Until next week, be wonderful to yourselves and be wonderful to each other. Take care, everyone.